Hello, this is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 12th of July. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner, and I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Michael Wyart.
Hello.
Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
Now we start with What's On. At the Theatre Royal Winchester on the 19th and 20th of July, Chamber Opera Chicago present a musical drama of Jane Austen's novel Persuasion. It features songs from Jane Austen's original manuscripts and music of the period. It's fully staged with chamber orchestra, beautiful Regency costumes, and, a little surprisingly, I think, world champion Irish dancers. The performances start at 7:30 p.m., and there's a pre-performance lecture at 6:15. Tickets are £14 or £10 for concessions, and they can be obtained from the box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. Or if the fine weather continues on Saturday the 20th of July, you might like to go to an open-air production of Twelfth Night, performed by Chapter House Theatre Company at Sparsholt College. Tickets are £14.50 for adults, £10 for children, and you do have to bring your own seating. If you're interested in this, ring 01962 797 292. That's 01962 797 292. During the day on Saturday the 20th, you might like to visit Mitchell Dever Summer Fete, held in Mitchell Dever Village from 12:30 to 4 p.m. And on Sunday the 21st of July, there's an evening of opera, arias and overtures at Winchester Guildhall at 7:30 p.m. in aid of juvenile diabetes research. Tickets are £16, concessions £10, and obtainable from 01590 670 114. That's 01590 670 114. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 12th of July at 5:05 a.m. and begins at 9:18 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of July, it ends at 5:11 a.m. and begins at 9:13 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your own recording, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. 01962 862 826. And now we come to the main headlines this week. They are Boy 13 Impaled on Metal Railings, The Sun Had His Hat On, and Call for Action as Car Crashes into Cottage. So we'll go over to Michael, please, for the story behind the first headline.
Yes, this is the one about headed Boy 13 Impaled on Metal Railings, Teenager Trapped for Half an Hour. Horrified neighbours have described the moments after a teenager impaled himself on a fence in Winchester. For more than half an hour, the 13-year-old was trapped on a cast-iron railing outside Winchester's Peter Simmons College before being released by firefighters. It has since emerged the potential dangers had been raised with the college. The boy, who's not been named, slipped while climbing over the fence along the college playing fields at about 6:25 on Monday. The fire crew had to cut away three railings before he could be taken by road to Southampton General Hospital, still skewered onto the metal spike. Watch manager Paul Rance of Winchester Prison Fire Station said it had punctured him and gone up his back to his shoulder blade. Members of the public supported him and got him comfortable, and we set wooden blocks under his feet. We gave him oxygen therapy, and then the ambulance arrived and gave him pain relief. He was conscious and breathing and a very brave lad. Hopefully the spike hasn't hit anything major. The potential dangers have been raised with the college on a number of occasions, it was claimed. Councillor Raymond Pierce said, "I was aware that boys were climbing over that fence. We were hoping to get it resolved as soon as possible before this sort of accident happened." My colleague, Councillor Martin Todd, has spoken to the college previously, and I know the residents have been saying things about it too. Anna Cady, an artist, lives on Hathley Road, and she said, "We have said to the college before, please cut those spikes. I go down there and plead with the boys not to go over the railings." One of the mums, living on an adjacent road, who asked not to be named, said, "Every time I look at those spikes, I think how unnecessary they are. It's a horrible incident. I heard the emergency services go screaming past the house and it was just horrid. And then someone said an air ambulance had been called." Another neighbour who asked to remain anonymous said, "We saw the air ambulance. It was quite a worrying sight. It seemed inevitable it was going to happen. When the gates are closed, they start to climb over the fence. So it was an incident just waiting to happen. But they get away with it. It's such a horrible accident. You just hope everything is going to be okay." In a statement, the college said, "We understand that a 13-year-old boy hurt himself on Monday climbing over a college perimeter fence. We are pleased to hear that he is expected to recover fully. He had been playing on our campus after the college had closed for the day and chose to climb some railings as a shortcut to return to his home nearby rather than to use an open gate approximately 100 metres away. We will, of course, review the safety of this fence, but it is worth noting that it has been in place for many years and we believe at least since the Second World War."
The Sun had his hat on. Winchester was buzzing with creativity last weekend for its famous festival of all things artistic, writes Wesley Rock. It was the return of the Hat Fair, and after several seemingly rain-sodden years, the Sun had his hat on for the occasion. At the first event, since the organisers joined forces with the Theatre Royal to secure the event's long-term future, there was the usual riot of street theatre, music and magic. Within the grounds of the cathedral, throngs of schoolchildren sat on the grass to take in a magic show, while the inner close was given over to a sound sculpture. Creator Ray Lee said, "It's a kinetic sound installation. The sound comes out of them and it creates a composition, and the audience can move around within it and explore it." The Broadway was closed off to traffic and side streets were transformed into markets, packed with arts and crafts of every description, while the air was filled with the smells from a dizzying choice of tasty foods. The unlikeliest places became venues, including Abbey Gardens, St Morris's Covert and the Brook Shopping Centre. There was also a rare United Kingdom appearance by a French sculptor, Denis Tricot, who has applied his talents to the weirs, which became an illuminated pathway. Meanwhile, several indoor events got underway as part of the Hidden Hat Fair, which organisers said delivered intimate and sophisticated performances in unexpected and special locations. Mark Courtis, director at the theatre, said, "This is something very unique in the history of Winchester. We've done a lot of work
on making it a family-friendly occasion, such as the small outdoor area between the Discovery Centre and the theatre, which was given over as a magic garden just for youngsters up to 5 years old. Taking part in the Children's Parade and Mad Hatter's Lunch on Friday were St Bede, St Peter's, Stanmore and Western Primaries, with music by the King's School Samba Band. The sun shone throughout the three-day event, which climaxed with an event relocating to Oram's Arbour on Sunday, and there is a photograph of a lot of people standing around holding drinks in the gardens of the Hotel du Vin, and there are a young couple, Jolie Vian, doing some sort of acrobatic act.
Call for action as car crashes into cottage. Residents worried over speed limit near the junction. Winchester residents have called for action at an accident black spot after two cars collided with a house on Tuesday. Drivers miraculously escaped unharmed after a silver Hyundai Getz and a red Volkswagen Polo collided on the A3090 at Pitt between Winchester and Hursley just before 4:30 p.m. The Getz ended up on top of the Polo as they crashed at the junction of Enmill Lane, where they left the road and smashed through into the kitchen of a thatched cottage. No one was hurt indoors either. Locals have campaigned to reduce the 50-mile-an-hour speed limit along the road for years, and the resident who would not be named said, "This is down to the speed limit here and the high speeds cars travel along this piece of road." Neighbours Dan and Frederica Burge added that the road was a concern with young families in the area. Mr. Burge, 36, a consultant, said, "I was driving back from the school run with my two boys, and when we got back and saw this, my first reaction was to make sure my kids were safe, but also not this again. It very nearly happened to us 4 years ago. A car was inches away from going into our house." Anne Bright, also of Enmill Lane, said she and her husband Roy were shunted at the junction 10 years ago. She said, "We've been here for 49 years and there have always been accidents here. There are lots of things that you could do to solve the problem, but when will anyone take any notice?" Eleanor Bell, Parish Council Chairman and former City Councillor, said an agreement was in place to reduce the speed limit to 40 miles an hour, but there'd been no action yet. She said, "We've had this agreement, it's not been implemented. Whether 40 mile an hour is enough is debatable anyway." The problem is, when the police and the county do their three-year reviews, many of these accidents don't feature because there were no serious injuries or fatalities. Speaking at the scene, PC Duncan Clark Booth said, "Luckily, no one was hurt. We've not made any arrests, but we're investigating this incident." Both cars have been removed from the scene by Wednesday morning, and there's a photograph of this red car being crunched with the grey car on top of it, and the red car is banged right into the house. Looks very uncomfortable.
We come on to death notices now, and these are Harding, Ernest Harding, known as Eric, aged 95, Hibdige, Norman Hibdige, past mayor of Winchester, peacefully in hospital. Jolly, patients Betty Jolly, at home. Moody, Nigel Moody. Thomas, Trevor Thomas, at the old parsonage, Otterbourne, aged 88. And finally, Torrode, Grant Torrode. And now, Deborah, could we please have Christian comment?
And this week it's written by Mary Gray and is entitled, "What Does St Benedict Have to Offer Us Today?" July the 11th marks the feast of St Benedict, who lived in Italy from AD 480 to 543 and is the patron saint of Europe. Here in Hampshire, we're blessed with a rich legacy of abbeys which followed the rule of Benedict. Not only do we have the present-day Anglican Abbey at Alton, but a medieval heritage. Northeast of St Swithin's Church, Winchester, once stood the great Abbey of St Mary, the Nuns' Minster, usually known as Nunnaminster. It was founded jointly by Alfred and his queen, Aelswyth, at the end of the 9th century, but the buildings were completed by their son, Edward the Elder. After Alfred's death, the queen retired to this monastery where she died. In Wirral, where I live, there was also a famous Benedictine Abbey of Sisters founded by Queen Elfrida in 955. We celebrated its history last year in a musical pageant in the grounds of the priory, built over the abbey's ruins. And Hampshire is no different from many parts of Britain. But what has this 6th century saint to offer us today in a totally different society and culture? Why did philosopher-theologian Alistair MacIntyre end his book After Virtue, written in 1993, saying, "We're again in the Dark Ages," and calling for a new and very different St Benedict? For starters, not the first to start a monastic movement, he was the first to create a rule that brought together its key insights. It's the Benedictine rule that has had an enormous influence throughout the world as to how Christians, both lay and monastic, should live. He advocated no extremes of asceticism, for example, but balance and moderation. Like all monasteries, the practice of hospitality is a crucial part of the Benedictine rule. I was in the Benedictine Abbey of Glenstall, Ireland, some years ago, and aware of the wonderful contribution the monks all made in welcoming and eating with us at a time when the institutional Church of Ireland was suffering from an abuse scandal. Benedict gave great importance to work. To work is to pray, his famous remembered phrase. So in the 12th century, his monks were pioneers in reclaiming land and developing agriculture. Benedictine cheese and beer is famous throughout Europe. His rule organises the day into periods of communal and private prayer, sleep, spiritual reading, and manual labour. Benedictine schools witness to how his monks were pioneers in education. But it is in adaptability to ever new circumstances that the glory of his legacy still offers an alternative to what MacIntyre called today's Dark Ages.
Now we have letters to the editor. And the first letter is read by Michael, please.
And the letter comes from Jack MacDonald from Stockbridge Road, Winchester, and it's headed "Renewable Energy from Many Sources." Sir, contrary to Marcus Stanton's view, which was expressed in the letters of July the 4th, that I think all wind farms are good, this is not a belief I hold. Indeed, Bullington Cross is one of the very few good sites for a wind farm in Hampshire. A wind farm on Butser Hill, for instance, would be thoroughly bad. Nor do I hold that the alternative is the carbon-creating fracking encouraged by George Osborne. We need renewable energy from many sources. Governments need to recognise that a whole range of collective and individual actions are needed urgently if the risk of runaway climate change is to be averted. Locally, WINAC does encourage in practical ways, and Keith Story's fundamental shifts in personal and communal behaviour. We have a real crisis on our hands, as James Lovelock and others have observed for decades. If controversy about one wind farm leads to deeply creative, practical and concerned thought by all of us, then bring it on. As for suggesting a wind farm at Bullington Cross could lead to the construction of a Mitteldever new town, that is sort of mischievous suggestion that is needed only to make sure that such an event does not happen. There is, however, a great deal of expertise and money in the area closest to Bullington Cross. My hope would be that even before this particular wind farm project is settled for good or ill, we can all join forces to make a positive contribution to minimising, in a wider sphere, the worst results of climate change, both man-made and natural. For example, why don't Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever get together to tackle the problem of fuel poverty throughout the district, or set up one or more cooperatives to put solar panels on the many south-facing roofs in those villages? I am sure that WINAC or Hampshire Energy Group could advise. Jack MacDonald.
And now a letter from Councillor Sean Woodward on the subject of verge cutting. Sir, in response to Chris Gilliam, who wrote on June the 27th, good visibility is not just vital for motorists, but for other road users as well, which is why it's important to trim verges to maintain clear lines of sight. We do balance this with the need to ensure plant and wildlife habitats are protected, and with sensible timing, managed verge cutting can support wildflowers and rare species. The cutting is timed to help rare flower species, either early season in April to reduce invasive plants such as thistles or vigorous grasses that take hold over winter, or in late September so that rare species have had time to flower and set seed for the next year. Other rural verges are first cut in May and June after the first growth spurt, and the time plants have sprung up and need to be tackled to keep clear lines of sight. The second cut starts in early September to tackle summer growth. We cut a 1 metre strip of grass next to the road, leaving space for plants like cowslips to flourish beyond this zone. But at road junctions, signs and the insides of bends, cutting needs to be extended further to provide an unobstructed view for drivers. I support and understand the desire to protect all plant life, not just protected species, and the benefit we gain from their beauty. What we're trying to do is maintain a balance between their protection and road safety. And that was from Councillor Sean Woodward, Hampshire County Council Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment.
And this letter is from Councillor Keith Wood, who's the leader of Winchester City Council. Council just can't please everyone, he says. Sir, you seem to have three unhappy correspondents about the City Council's estates policy. That's in letters of July the 4th. There's not much I can do about the Brooks Centre, 30 years old, privately owned, and outside council control. Barton Farm was effectively decided 10 years ago, as was Silver Hill. We're trying to get the best outcome from both. Abbey Mill is being renovated and brought back into use, but we're not responsible for the development at Westgate School. Nothing is perfect in life, and the council works under many constraints. Not least, money government funding is being cut by 36% over 4 years. Our staff work hard and successfully to maintain services with less funds. Winchester Conservatives' policy is not unnecessarily to increase council tax, an approach most people agree with. We have to solve our own problems and cannot look to government. Part of that policy is to get a better return on council land to avoid future tax rises. This is why we plan to review Station Andover Road area. The aim is to use the land for more efficiently by possibly providing employment, housing and parking for commuters. There's also concern about the leisure centre's future. It's a long overdue for replacement. We've consulted many people, clubs and societies. Consultants estimate it will cost over £30 million to meet everyone's ambitions. We've not got that sort of money and would need to borrow much of it. On current interest rates, each £1 million borrowed costs around £50,000 a year. a 1% increase on council tax produces about £70,000 a year, and grants are hard to come by. No decisions have been taken yet, but we're trying to balance ambitions with what can be afforded. Equally, for every person who wants a 50-metre pool, there is one who doesn't. Whatever we do will displease many, but I don't believe that doing nothing is an option. We need to do what we can for what can be afforded, but whatever is built will be a great improvement on the existing centre. And as I said, that's from Councillor Keith Wood, leader of the Winchester City Council.
The next letter, headed Wind Power Can't Be Ignored, comes from Rachel Platt, who lives in Berwick Mews in Winchester. Sir, it's heartening to read that so many communities in Germany, both rural and urban, support wind power. Why do so many people in Britain object so fiercely, including so many in Hampshire? The Germans seem to understand the real risks of climate change and the outstanding benefits of renewable energy, both for consumers now and generations to follow us. If we can't make that connection, we are consuming carbon now and passing on the problem of clearing it up directly to our grandchildren. As long as there is a proper environmental impact assessment and community benefit, I support wind power. We can't ignore it if we're going to achieve the necessary drastic cut in UK carbon emissions. And that's from Rachel Platt.
And now another letter on the subject of shop rentals from Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dream. Sir, your May the 23rd edition left the impression that we, Childhood's Dream, were looking to shut up shop and become online only. This was not our choice, but your article did have the good effect of flushing out just how much support and goodwill there is for Winchester's independent shops, and ours in particular. Just about everyone has pleaded with us to stay and told us how much they value the toys we sell. Fortunately, we have found not just an alternative shop, but one that is bigger and better located at the upper Brook Street entrance to the Brooks. We open on October the 4th and look forward to welcoming both old and new customers. One thing we've learned is that the letting process, where absentee landlords have agents who see their role as to extract as much money as possible from the tenant, is no longer working. It will just lead to empty shops. The successful model is one with an activist landlord working with their tenants to ensure the success of both businesses. We still seem to have a council only concerned with extracting as much as possible from businesses. If Winchester retail is to survive, it needs to wake up to the needs to address the effect of high rates and all its other negative policies. Tony Wyman, Childhood's Dream, Southgate Street, Winchester.
And this letter is from Paul Cooper, which is Counties Should Learn to Consult. Sir, re-councillor Edgar's letter of June the 27th, has Hampshire County Council learned nothing from 6 months of campaigning? Of course, children's needs are a priority. What we as residents impacted by the Westgate All Through School have consistently argued and proved using HCC's own numbers. Add a further 60 places each year in the same catchment area, and you can appreciate the traffic generation is, as a consequence, is grossly underestimated. Councillor Edgar's unrightly constructed points fail to recognise the shortcomings of the original proposals and the inadequacy of the Chilbolton Avenue parking spaces solution from the traffic remodelling forced upon Hampshire County Council. Local schools' expansion for genuine walk-to-school opportunities was our mantra, instead of promises of unfunded school taxes, school buses, and dangerous walking, scootering, and cycling routes. This is reinforced by Councillor Perry's piece in the Chronicle of July the 4th, defending Hampshire County Council's forecasting and perpetuating the myth of good walking routes and extra drop-off facilities. This is now yesterday's battle. The decision is made and we all want the best outcome. I just hope Hampshire County Council learns to consult more extensively and makes objective decisions rather than deciding its own planning applications under the consensual regime Councillor Perry is promising. And that's from Paul Cooper of Cheriton Road, Winchester.
Looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, it's dated July the 12th, 1813. England's treaty with Russia. Napoleonic war finance. England, who has no money, has not been able to furnish any to the coalesced powers, but she has just conceived a new expedient. A treaty has been concluded between England, Prussia and Russia, by means of which a new paper for several hundred millions will be created, guaranteed by these three powers. It is upon this resource that they depend for meeting the expenses of the war. In the separate articles, England guarantees a third of this paper, so that in reality it is a new debt added to the English debt, and it remains to be known in what country this paper will be issued. On Saturday last, William Wilkinson, aged 32, John Burgess, aged 28, and William Yarwood, aged 23, all flat men from Norwich, convicted at the last spring assizes of committing a rape on Mary Porter of Runcorn, underwent the awful sentence of the law at the usual place of execution. They jumped into the cart with the greatest indifference and talked and laughed during the whole of their progress to the place of execution, the city jail. Wilkinson, with the most desperate bravado, came jumping up the steps and, when on the scaffold, looked round upon the populace and laughed. He then came forward and addressed the spectators in the following words: "The Lord of Heaven be with you all. I am come here like a bullock to the slaughter, though through the false swearing of a bad man and a bad woman."
And now, 100 years ago, July the 12th, 1913. A local government board inquiry was held at the Guildhall yesterday by M.K. North Esquire with regard to the application of the Winchester Town Council for their approval to the borrowing of £4,300 for the extension of the Guildhall premises, including a new suite of offices and additions to the public library and the School of Art. £1,800 for the purchase of the freehold of the site of the electricity generating station, and £601 for the purchase of land and the construction of a new road leading from Owens Road to the junction of Cranworth Road and Hatherley Road.
And this is 50 years ago, July the 13th, 1963. Winchester Radio Rentals opens. Radio Rentals Limited opened their 326 showrooms at 66 St George's Street, Winchester, yesterday. That was Friday then, with a full range of the latest design Baird television models, as well as refrigerators, transistor portables, radiograms and record players. Already millions of viewers in various parts of the country are getting Radio Rentals terms and fast free service, and now the firm are offering the same facilities in Winchester. The rent of a 17-inch Baird is 7 and 6 pence a week, and the model is installed on an initial payment of £5.10. And the second item is, speaking in the debate at the House of Commons last week on the Children and Young Persons Bill, Dr. Horace King, Southampton Itchen, supported a clause moved by Mr. C.A. Howell seeking powers to prohibit the publication of certain matters in newspapers. The new clause asked that no newspaper report of any incident contrary to decency or morality involving any child or young person should reveal the name, address or school, or include any particulars calculated to lead to the identification of any child or young person concerned, unless authorised by the chief officer of police of the area of the, or the Secretary of State.
This piece, which is from 25 years ago, is July 8th, 1988, and it's entitled Plans for Housing on King's Fields. Winchester City Planning Committee has avoided giving Hampshire County Council the go-ahead for a substantial housing development on King's School site. But there was a strong feeling that members were powerless to prevent it. This is because the County Council owns the land, the large green area between Romsey Road and Sarum Road, and because the county is both the Education and Highway Authority. City planners are very concerned at playing fields going over to housing, at changing the character of the area and making it built up, and at the traffic implications for Sarum Road, Romsey Road and other roads in the vicinity. The Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Colin James, urged the Church of England General Synod not to approve legislation for the ordination of women as priests. But the Synod on Tuesday approved the legislation in principle with a 58% vote. Urging Synod to vote against the measure, the Bishop said that within the Church of England they had held together theological understandings and outlooks which in other countries had divided churches. The Bishop said that, of course, male ordination might be a matter of cultural conditioning.
And now we have editorial comment from Deborah, followed by first person from Brian.
City knows how to put on a great show. Once again, Winchester was buzzing with creativity last weekend for its famous hat fair. And didn't it make a nice change this time to have some sunshine after recent rain-sodden years? It seems the sun had its hat on too. Crucially, the street festival proved a big success if the 69,000 people who attended over the three-day extravaganza is anything to go by. There had been some concern prior to this year's event, following its link-up with the Theatre Royal. Several new features were introduced for the first time, like indoor events as part of the Hidden Hat Fair, which organisers said delivered intimate and sophisticated performances in unexpected and special locations. So many congratulations go to theatre director Mark Courtis and his team for putting on such a spectacular show. Our story this week about an attack on a border terrier by two staffies in a wood gives the vast majority of responsible dog owners a bad name. A man and a woman with the dogs, according to the owner of the pet which was attacked, didn't even say sorry. Let's hope they're identified before another dog, or worse still, a child, is the next victim.
And I hope we'll get on to that story later in the general news items.
Right, and now we have First Person by Khalid Aziz. Parenting, so much more than gene donation. It's a bit tricky being a mitochondrian. These so-called cell power plants carry a heavy burden. Tiny though they are, they can wreak havoc on the normal development of human beings. Indeed, many of the youngsters we look after at our children's hospice, Naomi House, are there because of rogue mitochondria. These diseases can manifest themselves in the womb. Others only appear in later life, and we have many parents who, having had an apparently healthy child, go through the torment of seeing their offspring develop something in their early years which will often mean them not making it into their teens. At the moment, you can test for some conditions during pregnancy, but many of the conditions are rare. There can be just half a dozen reported cases of specific syndrome at any one time in the world, and since there are so many and you have to know what you are looking for to test it. When mitochondrial dysfunction doesn't show itself until the child is five or six, you can end up with real family tragedy as younger children are subsequently tested and shown to be carrying the as yet unmanifested disorder. One of the early spurs for fundraising from an AME house was the case of one Hampshire family who discovered that their two remaining toddlers were carriers of the life-limiting condition that their elder brother of six had just been diagnosed. Of course, we do our best to make what remains of the lives of our children and of those families the best can be. But there is no denying that there is a great deal of unavoidable suffering in the process. Just last weekend, a father came up to me to thank us for the support we'd given his son, who, having contracted a mitochondrial disorder, aged 7, died with us at Naomi House at the age of 13. 5 years of pain for the child and anguish for his family. "I don't know what we'd have done without you," said the father. So it was with some puzzlement that I read of the opposition to the implementation of new science, which potentially allows these conditions to be eliminated through the third-party gene donation. It started with Fergus Walsh, BBC medical correspondent, who averred that some people had grave doubts about the ethics involved, although he didn't specify which people. Of course, the tabloid media don't help with their tosh about the subsequent child having three parents. Parenting is much more than gene donation, as abandoned single mothers on every sinker state in the country will confirm. Of course, there must be controls, and in Britain we have led the way in the sensible regulation of such matters. But let's get on with it. There shouldn't need to be places like Naomi House, proud though we are to help. As someone might have said, do we really have to continue to suffer the little children?
And we've got a Belgarum little corner this week with, I think, 5 things to read. So Michael will start us off on it.
Yes, Belgarum, this piece is headed, "Life of Riley Will Be Anything But Easy." A former Peter Simmons College student is planning to run 4 marathons in 4 days. And while the challenge is a grueling one, for Joe Riley, the motivation is deep-seated. Mr. Riley, who is pictured here looking fit and healthy and well able to complete his triple, four marathons, he is pictured below, and was a contemporary at the college of 23-year-old Alex Watley from Alsford, who died in 2011 from sudden arrhythmic death syndrome. And it is in Alex's memory that he is doing his running. I like to think that Alex would be impressed by this personal challenge, as he loved sport and everything to do with exercise. "It feels right to be doing something that will push me to the limit," he said. The journey starts today, that's July the 11th, in Eastbourne, and will end 4 days later on July the 14th in Alsford via Winchester. The end of his trip will dovetail with the annual Red Heart Relay Run set up last year by Rachel Batheau in Alex's memory, and with both events finishing at the Bell Inn in Alsford. All sponsorship raised by Mr. Riley will go to the charity Cardiac Risk in the Young.
Ramshackle Relics of a Bygone Age. It was the closing of an era, the end of the last tin house in Cheriton. The Nook, long-time home of Harry Joyce, who died last year, has been swept away, and a new house is being built on the plot by the River Itchen. After the Great War, these homes for heroes, cheap and quick to build, were common across the Alsford-Alton area. But now few survive. Frequently on big rural plots, they are ripe for development. And being of wood, corrugated iron and often asbestos, they were not designed to last for the century some have survived. Belgarum always found their ramshackle survival in increasingly upmarket and homogenised villages to be rather refreshing. Are there any left locally? And there is a photograph of a green field with a large brown patch in the middle where the hut used to stand.
Hard times at the palace. Wolvesey Palace, home of the Bishop of Winchester, dates from the 17th century, while the original, now ruined castle, back to the 11th or 12th centuries. There was a time when the bishops were among the most powerful men in the land. So why is the sign on the right made of plastic? Belgarum realises that finances are tight, but surely a few extra quid for a decent sign could have been found from the back of a sofa. And we have a plan of the old Wolvesey Palace and a picture of the current Wolvesey Palace.
Repair already needs a repair is the heading for this little piece from Belgarum. And there is a picture of a hole in the road which has been repaired and re-repaired. There are thousands of potholes across Hampshire, which the County Council and its contractor, Amy, are doing their best to fill in. Or so the council keeps telling everyone. This one in Cheriton, which is pictured near the Watermeadow Nursery, must vie for the title of the worst repair. It was filled in months ago, but quickly deteriorated again, and somehow is now worse than it was before. The repair was so botched, the tarmac seems to have been pushed up, so driver and cyclists have the holes and ridges to avoid. Well done, Hampshire. Well done, Amy.
Nightmare vision that nearly was. Nowadays, many people get worked up fighting any planning application that changes even the smallest aspect of where they live. Good job they weren't around when Sir Patrick Abercrombie proposed ideas for Winchester soon after the end of the war. Colebrook Street has been in the news recently with Hugh Furley Whittingstall's plans to convert Abbey Mill into a restaurant. There is a map which shows that under Abercrombie's plans, every building in Colebrook Street would have been demolished and replaced, including Abbey Mill. The road would have been straightened and widened, and new buildings, probably like the former Friarsgate Doctor Surgery, built. Such sweeping development was justified under the guise of slum clearance. Abbey House was spared, and also the cathedral, but it was probably a close-run thing. Abercrombie thought he was building a city for the future. Fortunately, even in the 1950s, there were people who realised it was a neo-Stalinist nightmare. The worst of the plans were scrapped, but not before the section between North Walls, Friarsgate and Union Street was swept away. The map was shown to us by John Holder of Colebrook Place. So see Belgarum next week for the plans for Chesil Street. It's even worse.
And now we continue with further items of general news. Over to Brian.
And the first one is entitled, Traders Have Lots to Shout About. Bishop's Waltham heralds its independent shops. Traders in Bishop's Waltham think their thriving market town is something to shout about. And who better to drive home the point than the town crier? It's all about the independent shops. We've got to keep the high street going, said John Grover, who's been the town crier for the past 2 years. Some high streets are under fire, but Bishop's Waltham is fighting back. Mr. Grover joined a throng of independent shop owners to mark the Independence Day last Thursday morning, neatly tying in with the USA's Independence Day, as shops, cafes and salons stayed open until 7 p.m. as part of a national campaign to boost non-chain stores. The issue has been particularly high profile in Bishop's Waltham with the controversial planning application for a Sainsbury's superstore. Steve Miller, chairman of the town's Chamber of Trade, said, "We hope an event like this will help people realise how many independent shops we have here and what a great place this is to visit. The high street independents are important because of the variety they bring and the high level of service you get there. The town failed last year to secure a £100,000 Mary Porter's High Street grant, but the parish then successfully applied for a one-off £10,000 grant which had gone towards funding a market towns development officer. Heidi Lisa was selected for the role in May and her efforts will be shared by Denmead and Wickham. She said, "I'm thrilled to have this opportunity to combine my professional experience with a personal passion for the local economic development and tourism. Bishop's Waltham, Denmead and Wickham each has its own strengths, weaknesses and opportunities and threats. We can't wait to build upon these strengths and develop the opportunities in order to realise the full potential of each town." A year ago, Barbara Nicholson and business partner Susan Short opened a boutique clothes shop, Cassis, on the High Street. Mrs. Nicholson said, "Today was good, and there is a good atmosphere around the town. With independence, it's about the personal service you get, which you don't get with the big corporates. I think the development officer is a great idea." And there are two photographs with this, one with a bunch of people and the town crier, and it says, "Love your independence," and underneath, John Cameron left, Market Town's development officer, Heidi Issa, back with arms raised and with traders celebrating Independence Day. And underneath is another photograph of the town crier and the same banner up, and town development manager Heidi Issa, deputy leader of Winchester City Council, councillor Rob Humby, town crier John Grover, and TV presenter John Cameron celebrate Independence Day.
Honey Cure has the golden touch at RHCS, Royal Hampshire County Hospital. The healing powers of honey have been known for about 1,000 years, dating back to the ancient Egyptians who put it on wounds. But with the invention of penicillin and other antibiotics last century, it fell out of use in modern medicine. Now, however, a leading doctor at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital is using honey to tackle wound infections in patients from the newborn to the elderly. Results after just 1 year suggest it could have the golden touch when it comes to beating bacteria, including some superbugs. Not only has it killed MRSA, it has also halved infection rates for women who've given birth by cesarean section and healed hard-to-treat leg and foot ulcers as well as bed sores. Dr. Matthew Dryden, who is pictured here, consultant microbiologist at the RHCS, said implications for the wider NHS could be massive in terms of saving lives, doctor and nurse time, and reducing antibiotic use. NHS chiefs have warned about the dangers of growing resistance to antibiotic drugs. It could leave millions at risk from untreatable germs in the future. But a new, sterile, medical honey developed by father and son beekeepers and scientists in Ireland could offer one solution. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the RHCH, Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke Hospital, is one of only two hospital trusts in the UK exploring clinical use of the substance known as Sergi honey. While all honey contains natural antibacterial agents, Sergi honey has been bioengineered or turbo-boosted to make it even better at beating bugs, better than Manuka honey from New Zealand, which is generally regarded as most potent, says Dr. Dryden. Nurses successfully use Sergi honey to treat a newborn baby transferred from another hospital with the antibiotic-resistant MRSA after stomach surgery. Dr. Dryden's results showed it halved cases of women who had developed wound infections after giving birth by caesarean from 6% to 3%. About 190 women had a single sachet of honey applied directly to the surgical incision immediately after giving birth. Nationally, about 1 in 10 women get infection from C-sections, affecting thousands of women. Dr. Dryden, Director of Infection Prevention and Control at the Hospital Trust, has also used it to treat bed sores as well as foot and leg ulcers. He said it has had 100% success in that none of the wounds treated with Sergi honey have deteriorated, and by far the majority have shown an improvement. Success stories include a 77-year-old man with a severely infected leg ulcer at risk of amputation, and his leg was saved after treatment with honey instead of antibiotics. He added, "I think it is an amazing wound care product. Honey is a fantastic natural medicine. It doesn't damage the tissues, but it kills the bugs. Could particularly help diabetics and older people, and the low-tech treatment was suitable for use in third world countries." Dr. Dryden said, "We need to use less antibiotics. Honey has been used for millennia to treat wounds." However, supermarket honey won't work.
Getting girls into science. Electronics giant IBM set out a programme of events aimed at encouraging schoolgirls to continue studying science, technology, engineering and mathematics, with a view to considering careers in IT. Around 100 girls aged 12 to 13 from schools across Hampshire attended the sessions at IBM's development lab in Hursley near Winchester. Split into teams, the girls designed and marketed a new product in the field of data analytics before presenting their idea to a panel of judges. And there's a photograph of a crowd of rather jolly girls standing on the steps of the house.
Lib Dems attack city business charter. Document denounced as meaningless gimmick. Winchester Lib Dems have launched a scathing attack on the City Council's new business charter. The Council launched the document last month, claiming it will put commerce at the heart of the city. But the agreement is not legally binding, and some have questioned its effectiveness. Councillor Martin Todd said, "This is a meaningless gimmick. At a time when footfall in the high street is declining, planning applications are being held up, satisfaction with the council's customer service is declining, recycling levels are going down, and the number of complaints about the council are going through the roof. The Conservatives would be better off fixing the basics than indulging in meaningless photo ops." The document sets out the council's role in supporting the local economy and what they in turn expect from business leaders. It includes such pledges as, "We will continue to be as flexible as we can be to ratepayers," and the promise to approach businesses in a pragmatic and sympathetic way whilst upholding the need to be firm and fair. Councillor Rob Humby, portfolio holder for economic development, who signed the charter on behalf of the council, dismissed the criticism. "It's not a gimmick. It's putting the council up front, saying this is what we're doing for business, and we're leading on it. It's about partnership. This charter sets out what we mean in terms of economic development, work with our tourism industry, environmental health, and lots more. We also set out what we expect from the business community, participation in the projects we run, and advice on the ideas we have to help the local economy." Councillor Humby signed the document at a lunch for the delegates and civic leaders of the Wessex Conference Centre on June the 27th. Stephen Gates, chairman of the Winchester Area Committee of the Hampshire Chamber of Commerce Committee and managing director of Denplan, signed on behalf of the business leaders. Mr. Gates said, "The Chamber has a good relationship with Winchester City Council, and we're kept fully informed of the Council's work and future plans. I look forward to this relationship growing and becoming ever stronger. The charter will be displayed in the Winchester City Council's main reception and is also available on the council's website."
Heading of the speech, "Man had nearly 5,000 indecent child images." A convicted Winchester paedophile who admitted possessing thousands of indecent images of children has avoided a jail sentence. Brian Hembra, 48, of Colson Close, Winnell, was given a 3-year community rehabilitation order, with the condition he is supervised and attends a sexual offenders programme. Hembra, who admitted possessing 4,999 indecent images of children between October 2010 and November last year, was banned from unsupervised contact with children under the age of 16 and put on the sex offenders register for life. Winchester Crown Court heard on Tuesday that Hembra had breached an interim sexual offences prevention order banning him from contact with children when he went fishing with an 11-year-old boy earlier this month. The court heard he had previous convictions for offences against young boys and was jailed for 10 years in 1984 for buggery and indecent assault. In 1994, he was convicted of indecency with a child, and in 2004, of possessing indecent photographs of children. Sentencing, the recorder of Winchester, Judge Keith Cutler, said he faced a stark choice of either imposing a lengthy jail sentence, which could be appealed, or a community rehabilitation order. Judge Cutler said his main duty as a judge was to protect any children Hembra might come into contact with in future. He came to the conclusion, very reluctantly, that the best way to do that was a community rehabilitation order, with the condition he attend a sexual offenders programme to reduce risk of re-offending. Frank Abbott, prosecuting, said it was a very unusual case, as Hembra was caught after a police investigation into how a folder of indecent images of children was secretly loaded onto a random company website. More than 3,000 people who had a special password browsed the site over a 57-hour period, including Hembra. His details were passed to the police, who searched his home and seized his laptop computer. Mr. Abbott said police found a very substantial number of images on his laptop. Most, 4,822, were at the less serious end of the scale, and although 78 were levels 4 and 5, the most serious. The child victims ranged in age from 1 to 16. Mr. Abbott said Hembra admitted he was sexually attracted to children and avoided swimming pools and parks. Nick Rowland, defending, said Hembra recognised he had a problem. He said the most recent offences involved the internet rather than direct contact, although that was still a crime. On the breach of the interim sexual offences order, he said Hembra had been fishing when the 11-year-old boy asked for help untangling his fishing line. It was not the most serious breach of a sexual offences order or deliberately seeking out a child or grooming. However, earlier the court heard Hembra had taken the boy fishing on a number of occasions.
Hugh, I'll listen to residents' concerns, an article about Hugh Furley-Whittingstall's new restaurant. Celebrity chef Hugh Furley-Whittingstall has pledged to address concerns over his new Winchester restaurant. He runs River Cottage, and he visited the site of his new venture in Winchester last week. The firm has agreed to deal... The firm has agreed a deal... to turn former City Council office Abbey Mill into a 180-seat eatery, with planning permission granted last month. But neighbours in Colebrook Street oppose the plans, arguing it's an unsuitable location which would cause noise, traffic problems and early morning disruption through deliveries. Speaking before an appearance at a Winchester tourism conference, Mr. Furley-Whittingstall said he wanted to work with residents to solve any issues. He said, "I'm not surprised there are concerns, and if I live close to a new restaurant opening, I would be concerned. It's understandable, but it's happened at every site, particularly in Plymouth, where we have residents living above our restaurant. We want to talk to residents and minimise any anxiety. When the time comes to open, we'll continue that dialogue to see if there are any particular issues that can come out of that. Mr. Furley Whittingstall also defended the lack of communication with residents during the planning process. He said, "It didn't make any sense for us to start these ongoing conversations on something that was not certain. A time comes when that can begin, and that time is now, and we are ready to have those conversations," he added. "We open restaurants where we feel the building is right, the community is right, and the place is right, and they all feel fantastic in Winchester." He headlined the conference in Winchester Guildhall and said the restaurant was keen to work with local producers across Hampshire. But, he said, it would not open until 2014 at the earliest. Despite being used as office space for much of the past 40 years, Abbey Mill has previously been used as a restaurant during World War II.
Lanterns in outstanding health. A Winchester nursery is celebrating after once again scoring outstanding in its Ofsted inspection. Inspectors visiting Lanterns Nursery School in June, they labelled a very suitable, stimulating and safe environment for children. The school, part of a Sure Start Centre in Berwick Road, achieved top marks in pupil achievement, quality of teaching, pupil behaviour and safety and leadership. Joy Reynolds, head teacher, said, "We are pleased they recognise the fact that we are a very inclusive nursery school and that our children do really well and are happy and love coming here, which is really important to us." Councillor Peter Edgar, HCC Executive Member for Education, added, "This represents the culmination of a great deal of work from everyone involved, and I'd like to congratulate staff, governors, parents and, of course, the children for these excellent results." Lanterns was previously awarded an outstanding grade in its 2010 inspection, but Miss Reynolds said maintaining standards was essential. "The staff, parents and children all work hard and the framework changes all the time, so we are able to keep on our toes." Inspectors praised the nursery for meeting a wide range of needs. The report said, "Teaching is outstanding because staff know children and families exceedingly well, use very high quality resources and adapt their approaches and explanations to meet the varied needs of all children. All groups achieve extremely well. By the end of nursery, they have an excellent grounding in all areas and learning, and are extremely well prepared for later life and learning. The nursery caters for children aged between 2 and 4 and has around 109 pupils, and there's a picture of staff and children looking very gay coloured in this lovely weather, said, "Didn't we do well? Lanterns Preschool celebrate the outstanding Ofsted report."
This review by John Doherty of Michael Portillo at the Guildhall, opening lecture at the Winchester Festival. Michael Portillo opened the literary programme of the Winchester Festival with a talk that had the Guildhall capacity audience helpless with laughter. Though perhaps best known for his railway journeys in Britain and Europe, much of his time was taken up with anecdotes about the famous. When a vote was to be taken on whether Mrs. Thatcher should continue as leader in the face of a challenge by Michael Heseltine, Michael Portillo, arguing against the resignation, asked her whether she had tried to get support from some of the party's 350 MPs eligible to vote. She hadn't. "I was astonished," Mr. Portillo said. "I think that after 10 years, leaders make self-destructive errors like that one." Tony Blair was another man who made what Mr. Portillo called an unforced error. He announced he was going to resign, hoping the news would deflect attention from the fact that he was having a heart operation. But the fact that he announced his retirement at the next election meant he became a lame duck prime minister. Gordon Brown, as new head of the Labour Party, could have won a general election if he had called one, since he was very popular at the time, but he didn't. Another unforced error. And Mr. Portillo, as a 25-year-old himself, had the job of preparing Mrs. Thatcher for bad news questions at morning press conferences. It was then that I saw the loneliness of people in positions of leadership, he said. Mr. Portillo grew up fascinated by politics because his parents talked about little else. I thought there must be something special about a democracy, he said. His father, Louis, a Republican, came to Britain as a refugee at the end of the Spanish Civil War, and his mother, Cora, was brought up in Fife in Scotland. After studying at Cambridge, Michael joined the Conservative Research Department in 1976 and later served in a number of governments. After his defeat in the 1997 general election, he turned to journalism and wrote about walking as a pilgrim on the Santiago Way and working as a hospital porter. His television programmes on railways in Britain and the continent, aided by Bradshaw's 1864 guidebook, have drawn large viewing audiences, and two new programmes will be screened, one this autumn and one in January.
A day of pride as tigers march through city. It will be a day to show pride in our armed forces. More than 160 soldiers from Hampshire's own regiment, the Princess of Wales Royal Regiment, will march through Winchester later this month. Hundreds of people are expected to line the streets to celebrate the event, similar to when thousands lined the roads of Southampton and Romsey to welcome the soldiers back to their home ground in 2009. Among them is likely to be dozens of local school children who are being encouraged to witness the spectacle. The parade on Monday, July the 22nd, takes place under the right of freedom of entry, an ancient privilege that allows some regiments to parade through the city with bayonets fixed, drums beating, and colours flying. The regiment, nicknamed the Tigers, was formed in 1992 when the Royal Hampshire Regiment amalgamated with the Queen's Regiment. The event has been arranged jointly by the City Council and the regiment to celebrate its return from Afghanistan. The grand event will start from Peninsula Barracks at noon and will see the soldiers marching down the High Street to the Broadway. The parade will halt in front of the Guildhall and form up for inspection and speeches at 12:10. There will be around 160 soldiers marching and band of the Corps of Royal Engineers. After the presentation, the parade will march around King Alfred's statue and back along the lower High Street before a reception at the Guildhall. The presentation and reception will involve the Mayor, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, and the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire and High Steward of Winchester, Dame Mary Fagan, together with other civic and military VIPs, councillors, soldiers, families of the regiment, and invited guests. The Broadway will be closed to traffic from early morning on July the 22nd until 3 in the afternoon, and roads joining the High Street area will be closed for a short time during the parade. The march is the biggest in the city since the homecoming parade in June 2010 for a battle group that had served in Helmand Province in Afghanistan.
Hundreds signed petition to save green space. More than 500 people have signed a petition against controversial plans to build on a Winchester park. The City Council is proposing to build 35 houses and flats on a green open space at Abbots Barton as part of its new house building programme. Council chiefs say there's an urgent need for more affordable homes, but protesters want to save the Riverside Park with its mature oaks and sweet chestnut trees. The 530-signature Save Our Parks petition urges the council to protect and preserve the large central park at Abbotts Barton and Dyson Drive Green. Campaigners are calling for brownfield sites to be developed instead, including empty council offices in Chesil Street, the Cattle Market car park in Andover Road, and a temporary county council staff car park at Bar End. Under the proposals, 15% of green open space in the estate would be lost. The council wants to build 20 homes in the park and 15 on Dyson Drive. However, less controversial proposals to convert garage blocks in Austin Close and Colborne Court into housing, which some people, local people supported, have been dropped. Other city parks targeted for new homes include Summers Close in Stanmore and Westman Road in Wick, all council housing estates. Mum of two, Lorna Chandler, said, "We think it's wrong to build on green open spaces, particularly in areas where people have limited means. We have a large number of people in council housing at Abbotts Barton who can't afford fees for tennis or rugby clubs or to go away for summer holidays. But it doesn't cost anything to play in the park or have a picnic. Once these green spaces are built on, they're lost forever, and it opens the floodgates to building on other parks." A city councillor spokesman said the local authority was considering all options for future use of its former Chesil Street offices, including housing. He said the current published council house building plan proposes 215 new homes over the next 4 years, including 49 on open space. And there's a photograph of the two ladies behind all this, with a Save Our Parks sign saying Save Our Parks campaigners Lorna Chandler left and Silky Kramer right.
Divas make public appearance. They are the new arrivals who are guaranteed to send their adoring fans into a flap. These are penguins. Two little penguin chicks have taken their first steps into the great outdoors after finally taking leave of their nest at Winchester Marwell Zoo. Just like the legendary singers they have been named after, these little divas are set to prove an enormous hit, with the thousands of people desperate to see them. This year's group of fledglings, born at the wildlife attraction, have been named after music legends, with Barry and Stevie already in the colony in homage to the worldwide superstars Barry White and Stevie Wonder. A third baby penguin is yet to make a public appearance and is still sheltering in the den while park keepers wait for it to pop out. Staff are keeping their fingers crossed that the final check will be a female, as they plan to name it after country and western star Dolly Parton. Marwell has always been an active zoo in penguin breeding, with its popular Humboldt penguins classified as vulnerable mainly due to the over-harvesting of fish stocks. Anna Ing, Marwell's team leader for birds, said, "It's always so exciting when eggs are hatching. This year is particularly special as we have three new penguin pairings. When the first young come out of the den, when they first come out, they've been fed so much they appear bigger than their parents due to a build-up of fat reserves. You can tell the fledglings apart, however, as they have white blank chests, like the one in the picture here, unlike the adult plumage, which has a dark stripe."
Cassia turns over new leaf with salad. An Alsford girl has designed a salad so good that everyone in her school is getting a bag of it. Cassia Smith of Sunhill Junior School came up with Cassia's Booming Salad. And on Monday, Alsford Salads made it a reality by creating and bagging it in its factory. Organisers said her tasty combination of red watercress, rocket, spinach and chives looked colourful and had an aromatic, peppery taste. Cassie and her classmates in years 4 and 5 had two tasting sessions, encountering plenty of leaves they'd never tried before. Sunhill's Joseph Lyle won the competition to design a label to put on the winning salad. The winning bag, complete with label, will go out to every pupil at Sunhill School. Alsford Salads is one of the leading specialist salad producers of watercress, baby leaf and organic salads in the United Kingdom and supplies many supermarkets nationwide. And there is a lovely photograph of Cassia Smith smiling, holding up her bag of leaves, and behind her is an enormous watercress meadow.
Going round and round the Rhino. With just a couple of days to go before rhinos start charging on the streets of Southampton, there will be no stampedes allowed on this Winchester roundabout. Thousands of flowers were planted in the shape of a Go Rhino logo to celebrate the start of the public art extravaganza. More than 3,600 plants and flowers are planted on the Bar End roundabout, one of the busiest in the city, to ensure everyone knows to keep an eye out for the life-size sculptures when heading to Southampton. The 10-week trail through Southampton goes live this Saturday, July the 13th, creating a unique day out for families as well as raising funds for charities. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Neighbourhoods and Environment, said Winchester City Council is thrilled to support Marvel's Go Rhinos appeal to provide this wonderful floral display on this important gateway to the city. The beds took 3 months for Kernock Park plants to grow and form into a design. Once ready, the completed bed was broken down into tiles, which were then laid out onto the raised bed to form the final design, which will last until October. Kirsty Matheson, Go Rhinos project manager, added, "The flower design is stunning and reflects the amazing individual artwork on all the rhinos in the on the trail. When the trail ends, the sculptures will be auctioned off and the proceeds begin being split between Marvel's rhino conservation work and the Rose Road Association and Wessex Heartbeats High Five appeal." And there's a lovely photograph of this flower bed with a rhino in yellow and green and blue and red, and Go Rhino in green beside it, Marwell Wildlife in red. Very nice.
If you thought you were hot last weekend, spare a thought for the pair in the pantomime horse outfit, which is pictured here on the left of the piece, and he's in a great furry, two chaps pulling a cart. Bruce Grieg and Tony DeGeed must surely have regretted their decision to choose the costume to take part in the Twyford Carnival as temperature soared towards 30 degrees, 86 degrees Fahrenheit on Sunday. The pair pulled the cart, carrying their children, Oscar, Pippa, Isabel, along the route of 1 mile, while their wives, Robin and Olivia, collected donations from the crowd. They were part of a colourful cast of characters who trooped through the village as its carnival returned. Creatively assembled contraptions depicting anything from a celebration of Wimbledon to the Tooth Fairy proceeded through Twyford during the afternoon. Among the creations that formed part of the procession were a tank, a wheelbarrow customised to become a bathtub, and a team of chocolate brownies. The procession wound its way through the village from Berry Meadow to Hunter Park, where it was followed by a picnic and a range of activities. There was music from the Southampton Ukulele Band, fairground rides, a bouncy castle, and a number of different games.
Winchester Area Community Action has revamped its transport services. The Getting Around programme launches today, Friday, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at the newly refurbished Transport Cafe office in the Brook Shopping Centre. Services include shop mobility, motorised scooter provision, bike about bicycle hire and the dial-a-ride scheme for people who find public transport difficult to use. Mayor of Winchester Ernie Jeffs will officially open the new office ahead of a launch party with free refreshments and a raffle. registered Dial-A-Ride users can enjoy a free ride to the party.
Small, but festival is sheer bliss. Thousands of revellers enjoyed a massive summer party near Winchester last weekend. Pardon me. Music fans, both young and old, descended on Vicarage Farm at Woodmancote, near Micheldever, for the annual Blissfields Festival. It took place over Friday, Saturday and Sunday, with indie rock stalwarts Mystery Jets and rising stars Bastille headlining on Friday and Saturday respectively. But it wasn't all about music, as this year's theme was Director's Cut, with film-related activities on offer throughout the weekend, including a documentary tent. At just 2,500 capacity, it's one of the smallest festivals in the UK, but has attracted big names over the years, including Winchester's own Frank Turner, Laura Marling and Mumford & Sons, who headed this year's Glastonbury. And there's a picture of a lot of delighted young people waving their arms about.
Junction works to start after the holidays. Work to ease congestion at a Winchester bottleneck has been delayed until after the August bank holiday period. The Highways Agency has announced the rescheduling the improvement work at the A34-M3 Winnell roundabout. The agency says that waiting until after the holiday period will minimise disruption. Work on the £500,000 scheme had originally been planned for late July. It is expected to take about 5 weeks. The scheme involves putting in traffic lights at the Eastern Lane junction and widening the carriageway to 3 lanes. That should allow quicker access from Eastern Lane onto the northbound A34. The carriageway will also be widened to 3 lanes on the eastern side near Spitfire Link, and the lanes on the southern bridge will also accommodate 3 lanes.
Housing schemes declassified. Winchester City Council has successfully integrated tenants into a former elderly housing scheme, according to officers. An overview and scrutiny meeting heard that the council had declassified several sheltered accommodation schemes last year because of low demand, saving £340,000 in the process. Amber Russell, Tenancy Services Manager, said, "We had difficulty letting a number of sheltered units, so we looked at all the sheltered schemes and their positives and negatives, and worked closely with TACT, tenants and councils together, to come to a solution. We've kept 12 flagship schemes, and we're doing a lot to improve them, but we felt we had to decommission the other schemes to make the best provision." Ms. Russell added, "We did speak to the tenants beforehand, so they had a good idea of the potential impact, and we made them aware of what they could to raise any issues that they might have. We had already introduced tenants aged over 40 at some of them, so there were younger people already living there, which definitely helped."
Churchman to leave charity after 26 years. A vicar who runs one of the oldest charities has dropped the bombshell news that he is to leave after 26 years. The Reverend Michael Jackson, director of St John's Winchester Charity, wrote to elderly residents and staff to announce he is to become vicar of a parish in the Yorkshire Dales. Founded in 931, the charity runs an 81-unit almshouse for local needy people of good character, 2 nursing homes and a day centre for the elderly. Reverend Jackson said, "I appreciate that this will be something of a bombshell for the charity. I'm nearing a point of retirement, but I feel I wish to engage with one further challenge before full retirement." Mr. Jackson said the part-time job would allow him to devote his attention to parochial and pastoral ministry without also having a large organisation to run. He also hopes to have more time for reading, writing and running retreats. The Anglican will, however, be keeping his home in Morestead, so his wife Diana can still commute to London, where she works for the Cecily Saunders Institute on research into care for the dying.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thank you to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Michael Wyard.
Bye-bye.
Deborah Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye, and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.
You saved that one, though.